Hello, Lifebookers from around the world, and thank you for tuning in to the Lifebook Member Podcast today. For Love Month, June 2020, powerful love month, exciting love month. We've got so much great content coming this month. It's really quite unbelievable. And today's episode is no exception. We have a member of the month combined with an expert interview. Once again, a powerful Lifebook member here to talk about love relationships, to talk about masculine and feminine energy, to talk about attracting love into your life, and so much more. Stefanos Sifandas is on the line. I struggle with your name, Steph, but welcome to the show.
Brother, it's so good to be speaking with you once again. Thank you.
That's right, man. For the longtime listeners, you know Steph. He does this incredible work in the field of relationships. And if you haven't followed him on Instagram, he's got a great Instagram feed. Why don't you throw that out in the beginning, Steph?
Yeah, at Stefanos Sifandos. Bit of a tongue twister, but it's sort of spelled as it sounds, just with an F. So Stefanos Sifandos.
Stefanos Sifandos. Yep. Go follow him, folks. It's a wonderfully powerful page all about deepening your relationships, better understanding yourself. Really quite powerful stuff you're doing, Steph. We love everything that's going on. But for the first time, listeners, for those who maybe just joined the program, just started listening to the podcast, give a brief background on yourself, your work in studying relationships, and then, you know, all of your work helping couples evolve their love lives.
Mm. John DeMartini says, our voids often become our values. So what we didn't experience, what was missing, what we perceived to be missing in our lives as children, it drives us, motivates us, inspires us, and allows it to be our highest values mm-hmm. as adults. And for me, I felt very isolated as a kid, and I experienced a great deal of volatility, and there was confusion in that volatility. And so relationships and the human mind and behavior and people and love and connection and intimacy, it just fascinated me because it was missing in my life in so many ways. And when it was in my life, it was very scary because I was waiting for the penny to drop, or when's there going to be violence or abuse next. And so it was a very confusing time for me. And so because of that, I formed this deep, deep interest in the human mind and what's our capacity as humans and our potential as human beings. And so that led me down a path of studying behavioral science and social psychology and philosophy and the human experience and various facets of that. And I'm a perpetual student of that. And it really led me down some very difficult relationships myself, very challenging relationships. I was very much out of integrity. I wasn't healthy in my relationships. I wasn't communicative. I wasn't clear. I wasn't transparent. I wasn't really the virtues and the characteristics that I wanted to be in relationship. And really I was living out my parents' relationship because that was the primary example of what I had. And we often cling to the familiar because the familiar feels safe.
Right.
So, yeah, many of my relationships in my early adulthood up into my very early 30s were, some parts were healthy, don't get me wrong, but for the vast majority of it, they weren't healthy. I was unfaithful in my relationships. I was emotionally abusive. I would stonewall. I would retreat. I would be aggressive and angry. I would be volatile and unpredictable myself, which made me unsafe. And I would blame and shame and project others. And I was really living out what I thought was, this is how relationships are meant to be. And it wasn't just my parents, my friends as well, coming from European backgrounds. And I'm not saying that all Europeans are like this, of course. However, the groups that I was with, my peer groups, their parents were very similar, very hostile in their relationships. They didn't really like each other. I don't even know why they were together. I don't know why my parents stayed together. I mean, I do know why, but as a kid, I didn't understand. It was just so uncomfortable and so aberrant.
Right.
And that really propelled me to seek what can effective relationships be. And to sort of tie a bow on this, about 6 years ago, I was in a relationship with a woman a long-term relationship that I'd been in. And that unraveled itself. She discovered that I was unfaithful in that relationship, and it all just came to a head. But that relationship and the unpacking of that was a deep catalyst for me to go into my wounding and into my core stuff, into my trauma, into my childhood experiences, into my parental dynamics, into all of that at a deeper level, not
wake,
just
wake up call.
Oh, it was a massive wake up call. It was a massive awakening. And so that really was for me. I then was able to actually couple my formal education experience in this realm with direct experience and actually doing my deep work. So for the first time in my life, I was really in integrity. And that felt very empowering and came with great difficulty because of the shame and the isolation and the loss. And the, I went very deep in that space, very deep.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's so intense. And I think a lot of the times it takes something like that for people to really activate that consciousness, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We often have to hit rock bottom or multiple rock bottoms to elicit deeper transformation.
So once you began to feel that empowerment and started to do this work, was there no turning back? Were you off and running?
Absolutely. I gave myself two choices. I either go down three choices. Well, it was two choices. I go down the same path. And from that, I'm going to be completely self-destructive. I just knew I would be, which would end up either becoming an addict. I was already deeply entrenched in sex compulsion and love addiction, so to speak, or love compulsion. Or become maybe a drug addict, or just not live a very fruitful life, or go down this path of uncertainty and unknown and immerse myself in the mystery and really come through it one of three ways, either dead, either end up in a mental asylum, because it was already deeply challenging what was actually transpiring within myself, or learn a great deal about myself, get through this and teach and impart what I have learned and what I have grown through. And I just kept doing my best to focus on that last choice.
So I was just going to say, when did the teaching part come along? You know, a lot of the times this is exactly how teachers and healers come about, is through their own, I hear it all the time on the Lifebook podcast, is through their own challenges. Did you know right away when you were learning this information, like, I have to spread this? Or was it more you went through your issues, you empowered yourself, and then others came to you?
It was a combination of both. The deeper the changes I made within myself, the more my life opened up in alignment. So the version of me that I was living was aligning with the vision of that I wanted for myself, because my vision was becoming clearer and therefore my actions in the present moment were more distinctive. And it was an easier choice to make. Of course, great resistance at the beginning, but an easier choice to make.
That's the Lifebook lifestyle right there, man. You're absolutely right. So you start this work. You've worked with so many couples. You've gone deep on some really interesting facets of the relationship world. Through all of this work, what have you learned are some of the most key, crucial components for a healthy love life, an extraordinary love life? You know, some people talk about communication or vulnerability or both parties improving themselves, whatever it is. What do you think you can share with us are some of the key components?
The number one for me, what underpins all of it and lays a foundation, is willingness. It's a willingness to explore oneself first and foremost, a willingness to go to the parts of self that are uncomfortable or dark or in the shadows or unknown, a willingness to celebrate one's own self, which signifies worthiness, so self-worth and the sense that I am enough. Because when you come into a relationship with a sense of wholeness, you bring with you less emotional and psychosocial baggage. You bring with you less trauma and less wounding, and you give the relationship an opportunity to truly flourish. So the willingness is everything for me. I mean, there are many, vulnerability is important, sure. There's understanding your partner, knowing their wounds, knowing your triggers, you know, creating space in the relationship, creating time for intimacy, all of these things, right? But for me, willingness is very, very important, alongside trustworthiness. And so being trustworthy, and this is both for men and women, this is for everyone, but particularly for men, when a man is trustworthy through his ability to be reliable, to be visible, to be available, to be consistent, to be in integrity, I'm doing what I'm saying I'm going to do, that is very important for a relationship to open up and for the feminine in that relationship to really, and the feminine, the masculine energetic is not necessarily tied to any gender specifically, right? Yeah. And so, but it's for the feminine energetic to then open up and be able to provide the masculine energetic what he truly desires, which is to be seen, to be appreciated, to be respected, to be acknowledged, intimacy. That's his way of deep intimacy, experiencing deep intimacy. I think it's important to understand masculine and feminine dynamics. I believe it's important to understand each other's needs in a relationship. Yeah, absolutely. Communication is important. there are various facets, not just one thing. There are many, many things that make a relationship hum. You know, something else that I would say as well is this yearning from both individuals, or depending on the nature of your relationship, multiple individuals in that dynamic, to want the relationship to take a priority above one's own self. Let me explain what that means.
Yeah.
That the coming together of, or just for simplicity's sake, two people is contributing in such a meaningful way to the world, to the community, to family, to those that are around them, that becomes more important than the individual's needs. And that fluctuates. So that oscillates. So that's in and out. Of course, your needs are definitely needed and are very important. However, that it's not 1 + 1 = 2. It's 1 + 1 = 3.
Exactly.
And yeah, that's three. That's a really yeah.
Well point.
Yeah, and that relationship is the third entity that adds so much value to the world. In other words, you're merging together. You're coming together of two whole people coming together. This is why it's so important we do our individual work, right? We have a sense of self that's healthy. But these two whole individuals coming together, that relationship, that dynamic adds so much value to the world that you have to be together. And then, of course, you're sharing each other's lives and you're respecting each other, you're revering each other, you're intimate with each other, you're enjoying each other, you're enjoying each other's growth. You've got to be willing to go through some tough times. That's part of being in a healthy, conscious, aware relationship. Like it's not, that's not free of difficulty and challenge. I mean, that's part of it. It's how. The difference between a conscious and an unconscious relationship is the conscious relationship gets through the difficult times with a sense of knowing that there's life beyond that challenge and that, you know, this is happening for me, not to me. We're not playing the victim. And we also know that what's our role? We also understand that we can learn something from this. We can also understand that our contribution to this is perpetuating the difficulty. So these are some of the key factors of a healthy, dynamic,
oh my God,
successful
I love it.
Relationship.
There's so much to unpack there, but you're absolutely right. I think the willingness is great, the first point you made about willingness. And would you also say there's a bit of courage there? I know it sounds kind of corny, yeah, but you say the willingness to explore these dark parts of yourself, that can be very, very frightening for some people. Other people, some people love to dive into that stuff. Other people can be very, very frightening and takes a level of courage. Would you say that there's some bravery to being vulnerable and committing to a real love relationship?
Yes, absolutely, because everyone has a threshold. Your threshold your risk tolerance levels could be higher or lower than the person next to you. There's always someone tougher. There's always someone smarter. There's always someone that's more resilient. There's always someone that's more courageous, whatever it may be. But we all have a threshold, right? And so when we're willing to take ourselves to our personal edge, that requires courage, 100%.
I really love that. That's a very specific point that is key to understand. And then also, like you said, this idea of the sum of the parts is less than the whole. The whole is greater than the sum of the parts. It's like, it's such an incredible clashing when two humans come together in a relationship of any kind, really, but especially a love relationship. It's like some sort of incredible chemical reaction with all these different interacting parts and facets. But one kind of overarching truth is that if you can work on the individual parts, but also work together as a team. I really like to have the metaphor of a team. You're on the same team and you're trying to make that team, you know, get a bat above 500. You know what I'm saying? So I think that if you can keep that in mind, that really helps with all of the different nuances and all of the different complexities, I feel.
Yeah, I very much, very much resonate with that. Yeah,
that's really cool, man. I'm loving your work. And every time you come on, it's like there's a different angle that we get to explore. I want to talk about trauma because I do follow your work and I see that you deal a lot with trauma and kind of, you know, this connection between trauma and our ability to open up and relate to another human often later in life. You know what I mean? So what have you learned about trauma and love through your work?
Well, firstly, trauma presents on various scales, number one. It's not as obvious. I can give you an example. So for example, if we were to look at a vet that's gone through multiple tours of Iraq, Afghanistan, wherever, you know, Somalia, wherever it may be, we could say this combat vet has experienced trauma, even severe trauma, war-torn trauma, people dying in front of him or her, etc. And that's a very obvious trauma. We can say people that have, you know, you read sometimes in the papers, young boy or young girl locked in an attic or a basement for 18 years, escapes, you know, being...
That's unbelievable trauma.
Yeah, absolutely. Very extreme trauma. And trauma is one of those things that's very, also very difficult to gauge and grade, okay? And we can grade it at an intrapersonal level, and an interpersonal level, because there's so much subjectivism within our own minds, it can be difficult to grade. So trauma comes in many forms. Trauma can present itself as you coming home often as a child from school, and your parents, and you bring your report card, and you got a B plus or an A minus, and your parents saying, why didn't you get an A? Could be as simple as that. That happens over many times over many years. You develop a complex around yourself, and that influences and informs your behavior and how you allow people into your life and how you pursue success at any cost. And it forms grievances within yourself, addictions even, and this sense of isolation, the sense I'm not good enough, and so the snowball effect happens. So trauma can be very subtle and it can be very overt, and that's one of the major things that I've learned in being a trauma-informed coach or mentor, is that trauma is a very slippery slope, and it requires a great deal of support and love and compassion and being seen and really patience and time to unpack that trauma in a very loving environment, in a way that a person can feel safe and not judged, because that's, and not critiqued, and not isolated for feeling what they feel or having experienced what they've experienced. Mm-hmm. There's many facets to trauma, and it really holds so many people back.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And you know, I think that I do a lot of study with, you know, Eastern and Western medicine, the Coffee Health and Science podcast, alternative medicine, all this stuff. One thing that I think that the West really got right is with their psychotherapy. One of their kind of bases in Western psychotherapy is you need a relationship to heal trauma, like that ongoing relationship with your therapist, whatever it may be in their eyes. You really, in their eyes, you can't do it alone. And I don't necessarily think that it's impossible to do alone, but I think there's a lot of wisdom in that approach, which is, listen, if you want to get through this trauma, you need to work it out with another human being. There literally has to be a connectivity or a relationship, or they don't believe you're going to get full healing. Do you think that there's some truth to that?
I believe there is some truth to that. We're relational social beings, and we learn deeply through each other. And there's also an opportunity sometimes to engage in psychodynamics or role-playing even, and psychodrama. And that can be very useful for an individual as well, to heal past experiences and very specific relationships with particular people that parts of our brain focus on and project, and the ego projects outwards, because inwards is sometimes more difficult. And sometimes people do that as well. I mean, I've been there as well, where I've it's very easy to blame others, but then at the same time, I hate myself, or I'm very angry at myself, or I'm blaming myself. And we can get caught in this convoluted cycle of you trying to find reason. And that's where we've got to sometimes move away from reason and the analytical mind and the prefrontal cortex and the rationalization of very painful or challenging experiences. And we've got to get into the body, because we register trauma, we register any experience somatically and neurologically, or in the mind as well. So we have to be able to shift it from our bodies at a cellular level. And that's more in the unconscious realm of the psyche and the unconscious realm of understanding and moving through life.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So much of this reaches deep into our soul. I think what you were saying about gauging trauma is really interesting, and I'd like to touch on that briefly, because I think we've all experienced the people who suffer extreme traumas and gauge it incorrectly by thinking what they went through wasn't that bad. And that's always wild. But there's another side of that coin. I did an interview with Jeff Hayes about grief. Jeff Hayes works with Patrick Gintempo. You might know him from last month's membership, folks. But anyways, Jeff Hayes, he went through incredible, incredible trauma. He lost a child and a grandchild. It is horrible. But he had so much insight on, here's what I'm getting to that's really fascinating, is our ability to elevate everything to a 10. So he talks about when you get reprimanded, kind of like you said, by a parent or maybe a school teacher when you're a little kid. And he said, think back to when the adult was standing over to you and staring down at you and yelling at you. You're experiencing full blown trauma and grief. Your stomach is sinking. You're heating up. Your brain is short circuiting. It's almost like you're experiencing a full fight or flight threat, like a tiger attack, right? That's what our physiology is actually reacting to. In reality, he's experiencing that same hate, that same trauma at a level of a 10, even though it's just, you know, some teacher, you know, yelling at this poor kid. You understand what I'm saying there? That lack of gauging is really, really tough. And I think that's where the relationship comes in, is you get a fresh set of eyes, someone who's detached from the situation who can help you work through it. I don't know what you think about all those words I just said.
I very much resonate with what you've just said.
Thank you. That's why you're a repeat guest, my friend. But yeah, it's that gauging that's just, we really have a hard time reading our own pressure gauges.
We do. We need perspective. We can't see the forest through the trees. Let's just simplify it. That's what it is. We struggle to see the forest through the trees. We struggle. We're so emotionally entrenched in who we are and what we do and what we've been that it's difficult for us. We need, again, we're relational beings, social beings. We need the perspectives of others, trusted, respected, revered sources, whether it's professional help, whether it's a family member, a friend, a trusted men's or women's circle that you're part of. We need someone to shine that light on those dark parts of us that we can't see. That's life.
But that kind of worries me because of the whole, you know, this advancement of social media and us distancing, you know, connecting more electronically, but not really truly connecting. And now this whole crazy pandemic, aren't you a little worried, Steph, about the separation of, that's a little.
Yeah, scary. It's not, it shouldn't be. Firstly, words are very important. And yeah, sometimes I mess up my words and I'm aware and mindful of that. But language is a gateway to, language represents symbolism. Symbolism is the oldest language or the oldest form of communication, understanding each other, feeling each other that exists. And words are connected to that. And this thing or this phrase of social isolation is wrong.
Social distancing,
Social distancing. It needs to be physical distancing. If we're going to do that, because it and that's another conversation, whether it's medically correct or not, whether it's serving us, advancing us or not, that's another conversation. But if we're going to do that, it needs to be called physical distance, because that's more accurate.
It's a weird choice.
But social distancing, I mean, we still can be social virtually, but we can be social virtually to a detriment. We've evolved to be physical. We've evolved to be in each other's physical presence. We need that. That's how we read each other. That's how we feel safer in front of each other. People spend too much time behind screens. I know the oxymoron of it is it now, like right now you and I are, you know, digitally connecting and we're on a phone.
So much benefit, but there's
benefit as well, but there's the other side of it. And so we have to find that balance point of, if you feel yourself isolating too much, if you feel yourself jumping in a car or a train or a bus, going to work, working 10, 12 hours, coming home, being in your small apartment, sitting down, eating food, masturbating, going to sleep, watching TV, whatever it is that you're doing, and that's in excess and that's on repeat and that's right, and you're not having that deep physical, intimate contact, social contact with people. And again, it can be difficult to see that, but if you feel that emptiness and you're addicted to those patterns that are isolating you from other human beings, then join a meetup group, join a social circle, engage in your hobbies, go to a yoga class, join
a gym.
That's
the cure. You're
right. You know, it's a starting point, right? Like, we've got to start connecting at a deeper level. And that was before anything that's happening with COVID-19 or any measures that have been put in place governmentally.
Who knows what's going forward. Yeah. So we need to be smart about this whole situation, but we need to also really bring consciousness to gird ourselves against the unforeseen consequences when it comes to our spiritual health, when it comes to our social health, our love health, our relationship with other human beings. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not here saying that we should all get together and swap germs. I'm saying we should, you know, go forward very, very intellectually and carefully, but think of these unforeseen consequences. If we pay no mind to them, they will come back to bite us very, very hard. That's how I feel anyways.
Yeah, me too, bro. Me too.
It's a touchy subject, but I think that the Lifebook members can all find some common ground on the specific parts that we just discussed. So yeah, man, I'm really kind of concerned to see how this goes. But hey, here we are. We're a whole Lifebook conscious community. There's a whole conscious community of people in the personal development world out there. So I think we can get through this. And I do have an overriding optimism there. Before we go too deep down the COVID hole, down that whole road, I want to make sure that we make time for discussion of masculine and feminine energy. You've got so many great posts on it. I've always been fascinated by it personally. How would you describe your study of masculine and feminine energies, how these forces work and that sort of thing, to someone who is maybe just becoming interested in this subject? And how do these energies play into your work and all the relationships you work with?
Yeah, so with masculine and feminine polarity or dynamics, it's an energetic that exists within every human being. It's connected to gender and biology, but it's not exclusive to any gender. So masculinity is not exclusive to men, and femininity is not exclusive to females in any capacity. It's a polarity, so it's two sides of the same coin. And, you know, it's, think of yin-yang, think of alpha omega, think of Shiva Shakti. These ways of expressing in the world, these dualistic ways of expressing in a dualistic world, help us understand ourselves and actually move us towards wholeness. And the world is so full of paradoxes, right? And this is one of them. And so when we get to understand this, and when we understand, I believe we have a core essence or core energetic that we express, that we're more attuned with, right? And from my experience, for most men, most men will have a core masculine energetic. They don't always live to that, but they have a core masculine energetic. And my belief is, and what I've seen and what I've helped people move through, is when they focus on their core energetic, whatever that is, the other aspect of that, the polarity of that naturally develops itself in it. And there's this beautiful harmony and balance. It's a different approach, but this beautiful balance that takes place. And an example of that is, women will come to me and say, I want my man to be more feminine, however they define femininity. Or a man will come to me and say, I think I need to be more in touch with my feminine. And we identify what their core essence is. And if it's masculine, which it usually is, I say to them, don't focus on being more in your feminine. Focus on being more in your healthy masculine, because then your complementary polarity will come through and you'll be able to access the feminine energetic within yourself. And this is a process, right? This takes time. There are many steps that transpire of this. But essentially, the masculine energetic is a penetrative energetic. It's an active energetic. It's a doing energy. It's a go energy. It's a creation in the world. It's activity, it's goal oriented, it's completion energy. The energetic of the feminine is a receiving energetic. It's more passive. It's a go energy. It's more adaptable and fluid. It's a being form of energy. It's in the world, it wants to receive and absorb. It wants to feel. Again, this doesn't mean that men don't feel, but again, there are evolutionary reasons why men struggle with emotions, not just culturally conditioned reasons. And there are reasons why we don't access our emotions as readily available as women do. And I'm talking about genders now, males, females. And again, the transcendence of that, or the movement, does go into masculine, feminine, and energetics as well. So there's a lot to this. But if you're first starting out, understand that we need a balance in our lives of how we are. So for example, anything in excess is just unhealthy. Anything in excess. So if you're overworking, if you're obsessed with goals and goal orientation and completion, whether it's in your sexual relationships, so if all you're about is just orgasm, ejaculation, if all you're about is status and getting the next title or getting the next, moving up the corporate ladder or making more money this month, if that's all you're obsessed with, to the detriment where other values and other aspects and expressions of yourself are being compromised, you're more than likely in an extreme expressive state where we're not, and you can identify whether it's masculine or feminine, right? Because you can, again, there's shadow aspects to everything. So whilst femininity is a receiving passive energy, an extreme example of that could be just sitting on the couch waiting for life to happen to you or for you.
Right.
It's just victim, like the shadow side of that is the shadow side of passivity, because passivity and receiving is beautiful, right? It's an acceptance of life. But the shadow side of that is being complacent. The shadow side of that is being resignation is the shadow side of that. Is just sitting there and saying, oh,
great word choice, yeah.
Life's, yeah, I had to think
apathy,
about that.
Maybe.
Yeah,
maybe,
apathy, absolutely.
Yeah, that's
and
exactly
you,
right.
You know, life's just going to happen for me. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to take action. I don't have to, I can just sit here.
The shadow side. That's exactly right. The
shadow
side of masculinity, obvious as well, you know,
very
conquering things like that, you know.
Yeah, or extreme enterprise, you know, where you're creating, you're doing in the world, but your health is suffering, or you're victimizing others, you're hurting others in order to achieve this goal.
Stepping on people, some sort of conquest. Yeah, ages old.
Yeah. You know, shareholder maximization, quarterly profits, you know, what can we do to bump the numbers? You know, like these are extreme expressions of shadow expressions of a doing energy as an example. But if you feel out of equilibrium, because our nature is to be homeostatic, like that's every living being is to move into homeostasis. You don't want to be too cold. You don't want to be too hot. You don't want to be too full, but you don't want to be too empty either in terms of food, right, for example. You know, we want to move in homeostasis. So find your homeostasis or find where you're extreme, and then you can look at your masculine or feminine energetic, and that can give you insight into what you need to work more on or into in terms of healthy aspects of self.
It's so fascinating to me, man. I feel like I have a kind of natural flow to where this stuff I feel I'm in a good place with. I've seen people dig into this and apply it in their lives and have it be massively powerful. My parents being one of them. I mean, Missy and her feminine energy. And also my dad kind of, you know, my father, for those who may be just tuning in, John Butcher, kind of shifting out of his go, go, go state, which he still holds. But do you also feel that there's kind of a, you said shifting into homeostasis. Do you also feel that there's kind of an aging process? Like as you develop these experiences and you have successes in your life, like maybe your energy ratios shift a little bit, maybe?
That's a good question. I think with time, because experiences are intimately connected to time, time and space, I think with certain experiences coupled with active reflection and introspection, deliberate introspection, we grow and we expand ourselves. So therefore, we become more deliberate and active and conscious of the choices we make. And as opposed to being driven by patterns or unconscious wounding, we become more in the driver's seat and in mastery of ourselves. And from that place, we can be more directive with our energetics. So possibly, yes.
Interesting. I like it, man. I like it. We could probably do an hour on masculine and feminine energies.
It's a big one. Yeah.
I want to make sure we make time for singles before we sign off here. But listeners, you can stay tuned. Steph will be back for sure, of course. We're actually talking about doing a little project. Nothing in stone yet, but just a little
excited, though.
Yeah, maybe we'll discuss that. So stay tuned for that, Lifebook members. But I want to get your take, Steph, on, you talk about deepening relationships a lot, but some Lifebook members are single and we don't want them left out, especially for this awesome podcast for this month. Do you have any advice for those single Lifebookers, maybe a mind state shift or different approaches on someone who's looking to attract love into their life? You know, maybe COVID aside because of all the craziness, or maybe not, but give me your thoughts on attracting love in your life.
Yeah, well, the first relationship that we have ultimately is a relationship to ourselves. So whether you're single or in a relationship, you just started dating, you just broke up, whatever it is, we're always in relationship with ourselves. And so what can you do and be to evolve and enhance that relationship with yourself? You know, the life book is great because you look at all the areas of life and you get to sort of gauge yourself and you say, okay, well, where am I really optimal? Where am I doing exceptionally well? And where could I be doing a little better? Where could I, you know, maybe it's the health and wellness aspect of self, you know, physical movement, for example. So you think, okay, well, maybe I need to start going to the gym a little more. Maybe I need to tidy up my nutrition so I should get a nutritionist. And maybe I need to eat differently or maybe I need to supplement differently. So, you know, you get to, life book gives you a very real platform to leap from and say, where can I improve in the areas of my life? And so as a single person, I think it's vital that every single human being spend time on their own, be whether they're in a relationship or not in a relationship. But if they're not in a relationship particularly, spend time getting to know you. What are your most important values? What do you enjoy doing? What are you attracted to? What are your life ambitions? What are your life goals? This is, again, one of the reasons why life can be so profound, so simple yet so profound, because it gives us a pathway and an opportunity to develop ourselves in the most optimal way. So if and when, because if we do choose to be in an intimate relationship, romantic partnership, because it's something that's very important to us, we get to do that from a more empowered place, and we get to offer that person and that relationship the best of us. And of course, we're obviously consistently in a growth and expansive state of being. However, if we're not reflective with who we are, if we don't take the time and make the time and create the space to really work on ourselves, and I'm talking about a daily basis, you know, making sure you have a healthy morning routine. I mean, my morning routine, you know, I wake up, I release, I go to the toilet, and people laugh often when I say that. That's a big part of my morning routine. I mean, I know some people that sometimes don't go to the toilet for days, weeks. That's very unhealthy. I mean, you've got to look at that, right? And this is the big part of my routine. So I get up, go in the morning, I release, I have water with lemon in it, I move into my stillness and my breath practice, I may do some expression, but I'll do a reading and then I'll move my body. And most of the time it's under intensity, not always, but you know, I have a movement practice, you know, where I'm training. And then I basically, in between that as well, I'll probably do 20, 30 minutes of work, just some emails, get some stuff ready for the day, coordinate with my executive assistant. And then after I finish my training, I get into my work day, my service day. And that's my morning routine as an example. Now, let me tell you something. Whether I was in a relationship, I'm married now. I was doing that before I was married. I pretty much had that same routine before I was married. And it's a very healthy routine for me. It works for me. And I changed my routine. My point is that I had a routine. I had structure, but I also had space in my world. Now, for those of you that are single and wanting to call in a person, I'll give you a very direct thing that you can do. In your week, make time for your person. Don't think to yourself, oh, I'm not with someone. I want to be with someone, but I'm not with someone. So I'm going to take advantage of my time. So I'm going to do more hyper-masculine energy. And then you're working 15 hours a day, six, 7 days a week. Where's time for you? Where's time for a partner to actually come into your life, to spend time with you, to see you, to witness you, that you can witness them, that you can, so they're not a burden to you because you're stuck in a rigid routine. Create space in your week. Maybe take 2 days off a week where you walk on the beach for an hour or so and envision your partner by your side. Set the table once a week to have dinner with your partner and set a plate and a fork and a knife and a glass for them as well. It's empty, of course, but it's there. You're sending, you know, create in your space, in your bedroom, create a, on the other bedside table, empty it. Don't have it full of your stuff. Empty it so it can be their stuff. Start envisioning and bringing in. Create the space, man. Create the space. Write a letter to your future partner. And let them know that you're waiting for them and let them know that you're creating space. You know that extra 2 hours that you're working every day? Maybe not work as much. Maybe cut it back by half an hour. Yes, you're actively creating space for that individual in your life.
That's wonderful advice. And making that space is such a wonderful, wonderful practice. Environment is huge, I feel. So that's exactly right, Steph. I love everything you brought to the table today, man. Thank you for taking the time for Lifebook members, sharing all this wisdom, sharing all these wonderful practices. We'd love to have you back.
I appreciate you very much, brother. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, where can all the Lifebook members find more about you, find more of your work?
You can definitely find me on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. I'm even on TikTok, YouTube. Loving TikTok. It's good fun. Stephanos Sefandos is my URL, or my handle, sorry. And my URL is stephanosefandos.com.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Everyone give him a follow. Check it out. Thank you so much for tuning in, all you Lifebook members. I hope you're having a wonderful love month. I hope you're having a swimmingly amazing time crafting your life vision. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I'm up on the Mind Valley Lifebook Facebook group. Reach out to me there. Would love to hear from you. This is Steph and Jordan River signing off, wishing you an extraordinary day. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Podcast.